our version of
Blog Talk Radio.
Time once again, you've reached the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. My name is Eric Payne. I'm also known as the Sun, and you are the legendary
K Thompson. Eric, like you don't know. So, how are you tonight?
All right. How are you?
I'm good. As a matter of fact, you know, we just had a lot of rain here, and now everything is all stuffy and sticky. However, we're going to be continuing on. We're going to have a Dynamox show. We do have Dynamox show. You know, plan for tonight. As a matter of fact, you know, when you have to report on things that are really not necessarily happy, but they're realistic and they involve things that are negative in the neighborhoods and the streets, you know, it's really not a happy time. But I don't talk to you about, you know, the information about the demonstrations and also police violence and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, we're going to be continuing with our show. Wayne Gilman is going to be calling in. Wayne Gilman, who's the former news director, you know, at WLBBLS, and also now one of the co-hosts here at K Thompson Live. And we're also going to be joined by Ayanna Jones. Now, Ayanna is a vocalist, a historian, a writer, and a vocalist slash singer, you know, has records out. And we're going to be talking with her about a few things that she wants to deal with. Also, we're going to be talking to Sandy Raiders, because of the fact that we started, you know, a show about legal services for people, you know, and people who get in problems with them, you know, campaign bills and all that sort of thing. So we're giving them that information, and Sandy's going to be calling in toward the, you know, the end of the show for us to give people that information about where they can get the information to take advantage of legal services, because we found out that when, for instance, somebody gets in trouble, or, you know, for instance, the kids get in trouble for minor things, or either, you know, even health issues, and they don't have money to, you know, do the things that they have to do, and they actually need an attorney to, you know, do whatever that attorney will do for them. So we're going to be telling them how to do that. As a matter of fact, we're going to be having a, you know, complete other show dealing with that. So we're waiting for Wayne Gilman to call in now. So
I'm here. Good evening, Kay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we were waiting for your voice.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, great. Yeah, how you doing?
Good. What's up with you?
Same old, I shouldn't say the same old thing different day, but, you know, sometimes it comes down to that. I'm just amazed at all the things that are going on in this world. But as you mentioned there at the very beginning about the whole issue of legal help, it's so important because we're living in a very complicated world these days. And very often you can innocently get caught up in things that, you know, you don't mean to have an issue with, but, you know, life goes on and things happen. So I think what you're saying is absolutely true. It's good to have somebody on standby just in case, you know, you're faced with a situation that is uncontrollable.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that would be a good thing. I mean, you have the situations in Cleveland and the various, not even that legal issues with people get as far as the disasters or the tragic circumstances with a lot of these police issues that have been facing African Americans. But just in terms of those traffic stops that people end up finding themselves in, those unjust traffic stops that they found out were the case in Ferguson, where they were using those traffic stops as a way to finance and bring income into that community, you know, and having a legal opportunity or that to resort to is always beneficial.
Exactly. And another thing, you know, I was talking to someone who had called from Detroit, Michigan, and there was something that happened out there. Derek Nelson, a young African-American man who was murdered, killed on May 9th. And,
right.
Yeah, and people are looking into that, thinking that they don't know whether it was a shooting by police or what, but that seems to be something in question. So, you know, we're hearing all these different things from all around, you know, and I said before, I think really something is, you know, it's almost an organized effort, you know, by some members of the police, different police departments, because it's happening too much, too often, and it always ends up with a young black male or black males, plural, being shot or killed. So, you know, it's just really, it's really time that people really look at this very carefully from state to state, city to city, and find out what's going on and put a stop to it. Because things can't get any worse. Yes, they can get worse, but the point is we want them not to. So, and legal services is something that's really important for people to have. So we're going to give that information. And when Sandy Reeves gets on the phone, she's going to be calling in about 8:30. Then we are going to be giving out information where people can get to me, and they can get to me by, you know, getting on my Facebook page, you know. We're going to allow people to, get in touch with me, and then, you know, I'll talk to them and give them the numbers and information that we have. Also, another thing, since Cynthia Holliday. You heard Cynthia Holliday downtown Newark, right?
I've never heard Cynthia.
Well, Cynthia is, you know, former student of the Thompson Dance Studio. She's an international dance student. She was performing down at City Hall, you know, with the Lincoln's statue in Newark, New Jersey. And she's going to be performing at Duke's, that's Vonnie's restaurant, downtown Newark, very new jazz club, which has delicious food. And as you know, we were there last week because Bobby was doing a shoot for Sherry Shepherd, right? Is that Sherry's last name?
Right, Sherry Shepherd. I don't know. Did we talk about this last week? Or this was in between time. Vonda's restaurant or Duke Supper Club, or Vonda McPherson has a couple of restaurants, fortunately, a supporter of the show. And Sherry Shepherd, formerly of The View, is hosting a cooking show where they highlight various restaurants in the area. And apparently Vonda's was a part of one of the ones they chose to highlight, and it was you participated in the shooting of that mob, and it should be something very nice. Sherry Shepherd is a very sweet person. I met her years ago. A friend of mine was in a TV show with her, and this is way before any kind of fame hit her, and a lot of you people that have seen her on The View, the sweet person that you see there is the same person that Sherry Shepherd has always been, and she's just a very nice person, good people. And, you know, I've heard these things in the press or whatever negative rumors that are floating around. I don't even know what the news stories are, but the Sherry Shepherd that I know is consistent with the Sherry Shepherd that has been seen on television. So she's a very sweet person, talented, hilarious, and you can see it back then. And, of course, you've seen her on the Jamie Foxx show. She was on there, and she's extremely talented. So kudos to her, and we're happy that she has that good fortune. One other thing, getting back to the legal issues, and as we know, the Justice Department released and came to some sort of agreement with the Cleveland Police Department in terms of guidelines that they're going to start instituting and things like that. And it's interesting, some statistics that I heard on the news per MSNBC, which is the news station that I normally watch. But they were saying 53% of Cleveland is black, the mayor is black, and a couple of other elected officials are black, but two-thirds of the police department are white. So, you know, in discussing policing and issues like that, and there's a backlash against the guidelines Vanna Wayne, you might have heard this on the news recently, that there's a backlash that obviously the Fox Channel and those people on the extreme right seem to have against these guidelines that have come out to say, you know, you can't pistol whip people, which apparently is one of the things that the cops were doing in Cleveland, and you can't do all these things that you would think should be kind of obvious that police officers shouldn't be doing. Of course, the extreme right had took issues with that. The point that I would like to make, and I would suggest that maybe perhaps if you have the percentage of police officers start to look more like the population, maybe, and I'm not saying that it would definitely happen, because if we look at Baltimore, we see that a number of those, at least half of those police officers that are charged there are of African-American descent, or appear to be. And so, but I just would like to see if you have a 53% population and maybe a larger population of the police force should look like the community. Maybe that'll be a different way of policing. But we know that when that comes about, there's no guarantee that just because the people look like the people in the neighborhood, they're going to do the right thing. So it's really an individual.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, Eric. No, I really think that's important, because there it's a culture in each department, and much to Loretta Lynch's credit, I mean, since she's taken over, not to say that Eric Holder had not looked into this, but it seems like she's really hitting the ground running with all these cases, trying to see if she could bring about some change. And it's important. It's about the culture of the department. You could put, somebody pink there to police the community. If they don't seem to understand the sensitivities of a diverse environment, you know, and try to come to terms with different disputes that go on, it's just going to be the same old stuff. I think what's going on is that shows like ours and others across the country that basically are bringing attention to what's going on is changing the topic of conversation in these communities, and hopefully a lot of the people who are responsible for the election of the city fathers are having an impact on the decision-making that's being made in order to bring about a change in all the departments, because there's a common thread. I mean, I see some of these funerals, and I guess because I'm retired now, I see more of it on TV than ever before, police officers who've been shot and regrettably killed. They bring cops from all over the country. You know, it's a brotherhood, as Kay just mentioned a moment ago. And these all, you know, all of them have a common thread. There's a bond. But it doesn't necessarily mean that everything that they're doing is in lockstep with what should be done to bring about a change in the department. And I think diversity means something. I also think if people were forced to live in the very communities that they patrol, the whole home rule issue, things would be different. If you had a white cop or a black cop patrolling Newark and Bed-Stuy and they lived there, you know, their attitude about their neighbors in Bed-Stuy and Newark and Montclair and all these other places would be, pretty much the same. But, you know, it seems like that whole issue with, and it's a union issue, it's not even so much the municipalities, but it's a union issue. A lot of these unions don't want, you know, their officers to feel like they're relegated to living in the areas where they're patrolling. And I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah. And, you know, also some of the stops that they make are so unnecessary. For instance, when the young lady called from Baltimore, you know, last week, Tuesday, and she was saying she was walking down the street. Here's a professional woman, college graduate, short school, and has another, you know, upscale job, if you will, doing quite well. Certainly doesn't look like someone who, would be offensive to anyone. Yet this policeman was passing her and took out his gun and drew his gun on her.
Well, she was I believe, if I remember correctly, she was just sitting in the car with a friend in front of there. She had come back from a date, and they were playing around in the car. She had an iPad up, and she was playing with the iPad, and the cop didn't know what the iPad was or act like he did, and that's when he approached them very aggressively, drew his gun on her. And but, you know, I kind of agree with to a certain extent that, yeah, perhaps it would be best that they live in the community. But let's look at the example of Camden, New Jersey, which the president was just commending last week. And that police chief, he kind of changed the culture of the department and said, we need to engage the community.
Yeah.
We need to not look at it like you're an occupying force, but a member of the community. Socialize, get to know the community, get out in the streets, more foot patrols, where and establish one-on-one relationships with the residents, with the law-abiding residents. And then through that, you get that type of intel to get the criminals out, to root out the criminals. But if you don't have that, if you don't look at the people that live in the area as people, as human beings that should be, that you're there to protect and serve and not just paint everybody with a broad stroke, then you're going to have these problems. And also, too, there is, you know, there's also the issue of racism that has been systemic in our country since the beginning of the and the jobs of police officers. So all of those issues need to be addressed. But Camden is, and that philosophy of that police chief is really a shining example of what they can do, as opposed to being resistant. You know, a lot of what I hear, what you guys have heard too, is when you talk about particularly the union reps, the cops are like, don't question none of our tactics, don't ask us what we're doing and all that, and this kind of all omnipotent, I'm the authority, and how dare you question me?
Yeah, exactly.
That's just a wrong approach in my assessment.
You see, but also, when you're talking about approaches, you know, there's a different approach that a lot of, you know, police persons, you know, use when talking to African-Americans versus, you know, some white people. And that is the thing that really is more annoying than anything else. Also, when you assume that someone, because that someone doesn't look like you, you know, or having the same skin color, is automatically a bad person, that is very annoying and insulting. And so you can't blame it when people, you know, have an attitude when they're stopped for absolutely nothing, okay? Now, also with this story that came out of Detroit, now, this person, Derek Nelson, was murdered on May 9th, and we're going to be waiting to hear what that was all about. There were implications that it was a police something or other, but this just happened, you know, so not too long ago, and we're just hearing about it now. But really, it's quite annoying, and, you know, it does make you angry when you think of the number of police persons, of people incarcerated, you know, and then you look at the cities and you look at some of these shows. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, it's like slavery. And also I heard, too, that people in the different parts of the country that have been calling him said that there is a underlying feeling that the police are starting, really trying to start a race war. And why? I have no idea. I hope that's not the case. And then they start thinking that there's going to be more black and brown peoples, you know, in the near future than white. So is there fear of people of different colors still in this damn day and age? That's so stupid. You hear it, and you
hear
it. It's so unbelievable that it makes you angry just to think about it. And, you know, if I go out and I have to deal with that kind of nonsense, please. Like, they're not, like, their paycheck isn't being paid from my paycheck, right? It's ridiculous.
Well, that's the paradox right there, Kay. I mean, the fact that, you know, We're all taxpayers. That's how they get their they make their bread and butter off our backs, and unfortunately they just don't see it the way. I mean, I'm not saying all. They don't want to paint with a broad stroke, but the bottom line is that the vast majority just seems that just have a philosophical belief about how things should be, and they are the bottom line, you know. And even when you travel, I spent the last couple of weeks in eastern Pennsylvania area there, and I know that there's Klan activity in some parts. I was trying to help my brother with a health problem, and every time I would go out, especially places where I didn't know and didn't know people, you have your heart in your hands sometimes because you just don't know what to expect. You try to be respectful. And even with that, it's just, you know, they see you different. You come from the city. They look at you like as if you're from Mars, you know. And then, God forbid, if you're driving a car with New York plates, or let alone Jersey plates, you know, I mean, they'll just pull you over for no reason at all.
Yeah. Yeah, well, as we said, and we want to point out that, you know, clearly it's not all police officers. I mean, we want to take a moment out to pay respects to the female police officer, I believe it was in Oklahoma, that was killed about a week before she was going to take maternity leave. I don't know her name, but just in the story they did about her, and I didn't even really see the story other than that's what happened and she got caught in a gun battle. But you could see in a lot of the stills and the pictures and the video footage of her and her relationships with members of the community that she seems to be a well-loved police officer. One of the police officers, the type we're talking about, that should be followed as an example in terms of how
right.
she relates to people. And certainly we want to pay respects to her and her memory and hope that her family is send out our prayers to her family in dealing with her. With her loss, but when you, it's unfortunate that happens, and you know both ends of the extreme are working to bring our society down a pretty bad path. So we have to have a kind of middle ground where there's understanding. And I've always said it's about the training, and you change the culture, change the training, and you know traditionally we know what the job of the police officers were. Traditionally, we know where America was in terms of their relationship to people of color, and the police were enforcing those laws that were on the books at the time. And so once we change that mentality overt and covert racism
mm-hmm.
in the United States, we begin to change the mentality of some members of law enforcement.
Exactly. And with legal information about their legal rights. You know, then that puts the whole situation in another, another area. People will feel that they have some rights and they have legal rights, and here's something that you can afford. You know, if you're going to, it's like you're going to be having this organization that's going to be fighting for your rights as a person. That's all. So, and if you're having a problem with the police and you have access to an attorney, that's worth it to me. It's worth it, like $15 to $20 a month, to belong to an organization that's going to fight for you. Because if you go to, you know, a lot of attorney, with their fees going to be high, and you don't need that, but you do need to have the protection that you're entitled to from the police department. You know, it really makes me very interested over and over and over again, coming from the very organization that is supposed to protect all the people. You're not supposed to look at people whether they're black, white, green, or yellow. You know. So, but the point is, it's really
quite
annoying at times, really.
Well, I agree, Kay, but I think there's a segment of that same society, that fraternity of officers, male, female, black, white, green, whatever, you know, that would rather see a lot of the people in a vacuum in terms of knowing what their rights are as opposed to what they don't know. And unfortunately, that is the problem that we all face because, you know, there are a lot of people out there protesting and they don't know the struggles of what other people of color from other generations have gone through in order to get to where we are now. I mean, when you juxtapose that whole concept of Jim Crow and when it was prevalent, and we're talking less than 100 years ago and throughout most of this country, including up north where you would never suspect that kind of activity was going on, but if you tried to go out and get a job, you know, all these things were in existence. And when you juxtapose that with what goes on today, we're in a completely different world. But, you know, if you don't know your history and you don't want to understand, you know, what goes on, the various cases that, you know, we've had to draw the line in the sand and take a stand on, you know, we're bound to repeat the same mistakes over and over again. And I think you're right. It's one thing to have that legal agency in your hip pocket in the event something happens, but I think we also have a responsibility to ourselves to know just as much how to act when something happens, God forbid, because it doesn't matter who you are. That the young lady that was on a couple of weeks ago in Baltimore, as Eric pointed out, was minding her business, and she was doing a selfie with a friend in the car. It could have been Chris Rock, Bill Cosby, could have been UK, you know, just innocently caught up in that. And, you know, I mean, there was a story a few weeks ago, I think I might have mentioned it, where And I just drove through Alpine, New Jersey last night because of the traffic with the George Washington Bridge. But I think Chris Rock was stopped with Jerry Seinfeld on 9W there, you know. And here's somebody who can afford a home in a very posh, well-to-do, upper class, not even middle class, just the upper echelon of society here. And he's driving with his cohort, and you would think that, you know, no one would pull them over. I don't know if they were breaking the speed limit or something like that, but, you know, I've been along 9W before, Cam, certain you have. It's not something that you want to, you know, say is tantamount to the Indianapolis Speedway or the New Jersey Turnpike. You know, it's just a regular road. You know, I think the speed limit is 40. But, you know, you got people out there that just are hell-bent on making a quota. And if they see somebody who doesn't, you know, fit the profile of what they're driving, you know, some people innocently get stopped. I have a friend, and her name will not be disclosed on the air, but we argue back and forth. She has a $700 note, monthly automobile note that she picks up for a high-end car. And I know there have been times in Connecticut she has been stopped two or three times just because she was sitting behind the wheel, not because she did anything, but because someone in law enforcement felt that she wasn't worthy of what she was driving, like she didn't own it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, it just amazes me, you know, what goes on these days. And, you know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a right to go out and purchase a high-end car if you could afford it, but sometimes you can draw things. I don't know. Maybe this is the wrong analogy to make. But if you know, we go back and forth arguing, you know, paying for something of that amount of money when $700 could be placed into something else that would be worthy of a payment. But then again, that might be my old fashioned Caribbean values, you know.
You kind of get to the point of, you know, can't tell somebody how to spend their money. But for me, getting back to the Chris Rock and the high-end thing with Jerry Seinfeld, I think they were kind of speeding a little bit. I don't know. But there were other times that Chris had been stopped by himself. And my point is,
okay,
what I thought kind of was, and I believe that's what happened with him and Jerry Seinfeld, but when Chris was stopped by himself, and if it's in the community that you live in, and you've been stopped seven times in a month, in 9 months, or whatever it is, if I'm Chris Rock and I live in this community, I'm driving around in my high end Benz or my Ferrari or whatever, I'm going to City Hall and say, hey, I'm Chris Rock, and I've been stopped seven times, so y'all take note of who I am, or else I'm going to use
right.
my money and my clout to bring attention to this issue and say who's running for mayor and who's the guy that's going to be opposing the mayor who could change this policy. I'm gonna put all my money behind that. That's what you do.
You use
your power, because that's what these people understand. This is what I've noticed in having family that's active in the political system, is that you always have to have recourse. If you get wronged in society, you need to have recourse. Who do you have to turn to? And unfortunately, a lot of the people that happen to be the working poor and all that, they have no recourse when they've been wronged by someone in an official capacity. And so when that person who has that authority is abusing that authority, they need to be able to be checked and have someone. So you need to have someone who has the ability to go above that person's head so their superiors come down on them and say, listen, if you want to keep your job or if you want to keep that particular assignment, you better straighten up your act. Or let's have a talk, police department. We're going to refine some of these practices that seem to be a little racist. You use your influence. So that's what I think. And Chris Rock, you know, it kind of surprised me. It's like, well, after the third time, wouldn't you go to City Hall and say, look, I've been in all these movies. My movie's made so-and-so amount of money. And if I bring my camera crew here every day and highlight how much you guys are being racist, I bet you activity might change. We have a caller on the line. I'm going to open up your mic. Caller, caller, go ahead.
Hello, are you there?
Caller,
hi,
on the line.
Hi, this is Sandra Revis. And, hi, how you doing?
Okay.
And hi, Kay. So,
were you listening?
I was listening, yes. Well,
yeah.
Yes, and definitely I agree that, you know, you have to, I'm sorry.
I want to tell people that, you know, you are with Legal Services, and you're going to be telling people, this last week, and people have been calling saying, how do we do this out? Let's find out a little bit more about it. And, you know, really makes me angry that to think that here we pay taxes, and in this day and age, you know, we have to be, you know, subjected to the, you know, to the strictness of, you know, some police persons who are of a different hue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's very insulting. And if you want to do anything, you make an African-American woman angry. They're going to get you. I'm going to get you, I'm telling you. This is unreal.
Absolutely.
The numbers of people in jail, you know, I'm
right.
not talking about people who should be there, you know, but the point is, you know, these minor things that they're in jail for, and then you have a jail full of African-American, black people, a lot of American Indians. What the heck is going on?
I know.
Take advantage of legal services, and what is it?
Well, I think that all of us have to be aware that we feel more empowered when we know that we do have some kind of handle on the legal system, and we know that we have access to attorneys that will represent us. Because sometimes we have to not just get all out of sorts if we're being approached by the police initially. Sometimes you have to fight your battles when the battle's going to be won instead of you know, just going all out initially. And we need to have more rights. And in order to have more rights, you need to have representation. As we talked about last week, some people feel that they don't need attorneys. I've had so many people tell me, I don't need an attorney. But I've told them, oh, yes, you do. You know, not every day, maybe. It's like you don't need a car service that will tow your car when it breaks down, because it probably doesn't break down every day, but it sure feels good to know that you have that card in your pocket that when you do get a breakdown, you can call for some help on the road late at night by yourself. So we have to get used to having that type of assistance. And many of us are not used to that. So that when we do have access to the attorneys, I mean, I get calls all the time about things like landlord-tenant issues, and I know that many people are involved in things like that. Some people
need
to have their will. Yeah, they need to have their will done, or they need to have their estate taken care of for a loved one who has passed. So many families get at odds when those kinds of issues come up, because someone might say, well, no, mommy said I'm supposed to have the silverware set. And then another sibling will say, oh, no, you're not supposed to have that. So there are all kinds of issues that, you know, can break family members apart. And I know I've had an issue with the lemon law, because you buy a car, it might be a used car, and even a new car. 1 week and 2 weeks later, it breaks down. You're like, oh, my God, I just paid, you know, a down payment on this car, and it's not working. I need to take this thing back. Or many of us might have had a license suspended, so we might need to know what our legal rights are in regard to that. And if you have a car accident, you better have a camera with you, as well as, let's say, a phone number for an attorney, because you need to prove who was in the accident, because you run into somebody, they run into you, and they're talking fine with you, but as soon as the police get there, they're falling out in the street and saying that they're injured. And you need to take a picture before and after. Then I had a woman call me about a malpractice incident where she told me fibroids. She was having surgery for that, and she was having one of those robotic surgeries. And mm-hmm. you know that this robot snipped her spine. And I'm like, oh, my God. So, yeah, so now she's looking for an attorney for malpractice. And then we have class action lawsuits where employees feel that they have been wronged by their supervisors. These are all kinds of things that you can use an attorney for. Or discrimination. I had a couple call me. One person was African-American and the female was Spanish. They went to get an apartment, and initially they were told over the phone that there was an apartment available, but when they both showed up, the management of that apartment complex all of a sudden said, oh, you know what, well, we don't have the apartment anymore. So they felt discriminated against. And then you have child support issues, divorce issues, adoption. Some people do want to adopt children. And you have name change. Everybody doesn't like their name. But they want a different name. It's a good thing, another name. Or evictions, people didn't put out, you know, where they live. And, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this reminds me of a case that I had. And I had the first one, state of New Jersey. There was a new attorney general, I think in Newark. I forget his name now. He was the first African American who was appointed downtown Newark. And I was, you know, at the bank, you know, was in line, and you know how people line up and behind you, you know, and you're talking to somebody, you know, over the neck. Well, this man, me dealing with the teller, he was in. And it was a white guy. And don't you know that then they're blowing his horn because I wasn't moving. And I was, you know, just said just a minute of talk. And he just kept blowing and blowing. And, you know, so I knew, I got out of my car. I said, look, I'm dealing with this. The teller just, you know, just for a few more minutes, you know, don't get excited. Do you know that being called the racial?
Wow.
Wrong. I had, and it is in the papers because it was the first paper and the first time that if you call somebody a racial, you know, by a nasty racial thing, you know, well, you don't do that to a Thompson. I was so mad.
I know that.
I tracked him down, got his license plate number before he left. I was so mad. I think he was on fire. Got his name, went right there. Police department and took out, you know, a summons against him. He had to be called into court. Me down here, been sending me letters apologizing. I did not care. He was called in, and that was the first time I won the case, and I didn't need an attorney because Are you there? Hello? Yes, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, are you there? Hi, can you hear me? Yes, we can hear you.
Fine, I can hear you.
Okay. Have you been listening to the discussion?
I'm sorry?
Have you been listening to the discussion?
Yes, I have been listening to it.
Uh-huh.
But so I need to be brought up to speed a little bit.
Okay.
You don't need to be brought up to speed. You know, anti-cop, you're a revolutionary. What you think about the police coming down to the people?
You know, well, first of all, can I say hello to everyone?
Hello.
I'm glad to be talking to you all. This is fun. But, you know, on that topic, which is not fun at all, I think that we're seeing a lot of police brutality and stuff on TV and in the media now, more so than ever. And I'm suspicious of it because, quite frankly, this kind of stuff should have been covered by the media a long time ago. So whenever there's, like, it seems like there's this sort of you know, marching orders that all the media has to first of all, leading up to what's going on in Baltimore. But, you know, every week they were showing how somebody else got shot and stuff. And, you know, every week is a different, you know, state. I think they're trying to put people in the mindset to make them angry enough to rebel against the police. So in my mind, I think what's going on in Baltimore, I think that, believe it or not, was orchestrated over time. Not necessarily the specific components of it, but just the fact that it's just trying to, you know, rile up young people, rile up the disenfranchised, so that they, you know, rise up against the police so that, you know, they can enforce their police state. That's my belief about it.
And run kind of a false flag precursor to bring in more excessive police forcing. That's what you're saying?
Pretty much, yeah. Really quickly,
let me give you your props, Ayanna Jones, because you are an extremely talented woman and a poet, a screenwriter, a performer, a singer.
Right.
And your talent outshines sometimes some of the company that you've kept. And you've, in my opinion, have been, in the short time I've gotten to know you, a very, very talented a person, and from artist to artist, I like to say that to you. So it's good talking to you and having you here.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. The sentiment is likewise. And I always told, as I always told Kay, everybody, when I grow up, I want to be just like her. I always, you know, thought she was a class act, and, you know, I think that you're talented as well. We had talked about doing some stuff, but we got a sidebar about, you know, working on possible radio projects.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I appreciate the compliments and stuff, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think everybody has something, you know, special to contribute to the world. You know, it just, you know, whether they're going to be able to do that or they'll have the tools to really express, you know, their unique message to the world. To the best of their ability, you know, it depends on fate and wherever you are. But I definitely, you know, I'm able to do what I do because I'm constantly inspired by other artists, like yourself, you know, like Kay. You know, so that's what I think about that.
I just want to interject for a minute there. I think you forgot one characteristic that Ayanna is drop dead gorgeous. I just wanted to add that.
Oh, nice.
I'm getting compliments, but it still feels like a roast.
Pretty nice.
Well, I meant that.
Right, red right now. Thank you, Wayne. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for making me feel welcome on the show. I really appreciate it. You know, like I said, it's been a long time since we've spoken. A lot of stuff's going on. But, you know, I think that we're talking about us as artists and creative people. So we're talking about what's going on in Baltimore.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see that there are a lot of celebrities, a lot of artists who are actually coming out and talking about this. You know, people accuse them of being really, really mainstream. When in fact, you know, just because they're not on stage talking about it doesn't mean that they're not involved in the movement, you know. And I'd heard recently that Jay-Z had given, you know, X amount of dollars to Black Lives Matter, but he was trying to do it anonymously. And somehow it got leaked by someone. Now, of course, as a cynic, you think, well, did they leak it on purpose to make it look like he's trying not to get attention for the thing he wants to get attention for? You know, but the point is, you know, the celebrities and stuff, especially those involved in hip-hop and, you know, the more the, for the lack of a better word, urban art forms, or pretty much Black music, they are actually more involved in stuff than, you know, folks would think. So I think people have to do a little bit more research before they just, you know, sugarcoat the whole mainstream as, like, not participatory in, you know, like, the political times, you know.
And you're 100% right about that. And, you know, the bottom line, even if he was to get attention, he's given the money. The money is there. Now, the money needs to be used wisely by the organization.
Exactly.
It's an organization that is smart enough to use it wisely. Another thing about Baltimore, a fact that I found out of watching the news shows today, that, you know, they had that terrible weekend this past weekend where they had, like, 30 shootings and 6 deaths just over last weekend. And they're saying that the policing enforcement has dropped 50%. You know, that the notion is that the cops have gone the other way because they don't want to engage because they don't want to be misconstrued. Now, Ayanna, I know that you probably would say, and it causes me to think, well, is this kind of like, you know, since you guys didn't like what we did, we're not going to do anything now. You know, so it's kind of an interesting notation, I think, to notice about what's going on. There's so many elements, moving parts here. I just want to ask everybody, since we have this discussion going on and we're running out of time, we're just about up on 11 minutes of the show, but I believe that this has been going on throughout history.
Sure.
And the only reason we're aware of the brutality that has been being suffered by African-Americans and Latinos is because of technology, because everybody has a camera in. And if, God forbid, I mean, if we didn't have those, it would be business as usual. But
right.
I don't think anything changed in America. I just think that now they're getting busted, you know, because they've always been that blatant just to kill people in broad daylight and think nothing of it. They've always been, like the guy in South Carolina, he just straight didn't feel like running after Walter Scott. And really, Walter Scott wasn't running that fast. You know, so he felt like, I don't feel like running after him, bull. But we used to hear about that, and Wayne, you could probably attest to this too. Back in the 70s, you know, cats was getting shot in the back, brothers run from the cops. It's like, don't run.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a sad commentary on society, but I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, these conditions have been prevalent for some time, and it's just that the social media and the ability that we have a facility now in which all of us can just easily just flip our phones and take a photograph of something that seems unusual, and it becomes documented, it's memorialized and all that. And I think that's the one thing that's made it important, you know, the fact that we could play back, we could see somebody being attacked by the police, and we can bring our own analysis. And even with that, you know, looking at the case in Staten Island, for instance, with Eric Garner, you know, even with all that technology, you know, the grand jury still comes back with certain conclusions. So, I mean, you gotta just look at the full picture, man. I mean, society needs to undergo a whole measure of behavior modification.
Yeah. Another thing, Wayne and Ayanna and Sandy and Eric, you know, we number one, we have to become politically powerful, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We have to vote. People say, oh, not that. Yes, that again. So get out and vote and have changes. Also, get somebody that you have legal redress and go about suing okay? And believe me, once you sue them, and they have to reach and they're possible, or you can sue them, or you can actually, you know, take out a warrant, you know, if you have proper legal instruction and whatnot. So this is why Sandy is here to let you know that, and I'm telling people right now that if you want to involve yourself with the legal services that we have set up, because we're going to have a separate show dealing with that, you can, you know, get in touch with me on Facebook, and I will return the call, okay? I know there are a lot of people, and I'm talking, you know, but we need that, so you can always get on Facebook, K Thompson, KAETHUMPSON. I know I'm going to have a lot, but we'll deal with it, okay? And we need it. So, you know, just hang tight. Don't lose faith. But you have to vote, really.
Since we have Ayanna here, Ayanna, why don't you tell us what you've been up to since we spoke to you last? What kind of projects and things you might have been working on?
I've been, I've been chilling, basically. I wish I had a more exciting answer for you, but it's exciting for me because I probably needed to chill. You know, I've been working my whole life since I was 14. And, you know, That might not sound that impressive to folks, but, you know, I pretty much, you know, had to be a leader since I was young in my family. And so I never really had a chance to take a break. So I've been, you know, just soul searching and thinking about what it is I want to work on. I'm still sketching music, still sketching stories and stuff. I'll always write and I'll always make music. No question about that. But just trying to figure out what direction I want to go in and, you know, what I'm most passionate about. And I'm still working on that.
We're going to be looking forward to it and keeping up with you every step of the way.
Absolutely, and likewise.
Mm-hmm.
And just in the final, as we roll down, but, you know, we talk about people having recourse and redress for the legal services with Sandy, you know, that there's that old saying, the golden rule, you know, he who has the gold rules. And, you know, that is having the recourse,
yeah.
You know, when you have mm-hmm. the weight, so to speak, to mm-hmm. go to someone or to turn or have a service that's provided for you, that at the very least, you're not going into a courtroom by yourself
because
any lawyer, any smart person will tell you that that's one of the last things you want to do if you have to go to court other than pay a ticket. You don't want to go there
mm-hmm.
by yourself and
mm-hmm.
not really have someone speak on your behalf. Sandy, you want to elaborate on that a little bit more or add to that, anything?
Oh, sure. I can just tell about one incident that I had. It was a in South Orange, making that left turn on that yellow light, which I still don't understand because I thought I cleared the yellow light. Then I got pulled over. And, of course, the officer wouldn't tell me what he was pulling me over for, so he gives me a ticket. But then I contacted my lawyer, and I went to the court. And normally I think I probably would have felt, you know, very uncomfortable. Not that I'm in court all the time, you understand. But I really felt good because the attorney was there, and we had a conference. He told me what to say, what to do. Because have you ever wondered if you go to these courts and you say, the judge will ask you, are you pleading guilty or not guilty? Don't you ever wonder, does this go on my permanent record if I say guilty, you know, like for a traffic violation? So, I mean, I talked to the attorney, so he told me, no, you're okay. You can plead guilty to the attorney, even though I still felt I wasn't guilty. But I really felt empowered because I got to go before the judge. I was the third person, and the court was full of people. And so that made me feel good because I was basically in and out. And, you know, people looked at me as if to say, wow, how did she come in here with this attorney? Or who is she? It really made me feel kind of popular, actually.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt safe and I felt self-assured that I was being represented appropriately. So. That's just one incident that I had that really made me feel like, wow, this is very powerful. And so anybody who has to go to court, as Eric has said, you don't want to go by yourself. You want to go with legal counsel because,
right.
you know, that person's going to stick up for you and is there for your best interest.
Yeah,
so,
and then I would say people should not get angry or overly angry. Like I was
mm-hmm.
so angry. Yeah, I think I probably turned 10 different colors. But what you do is you don't get angry, you get even.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's me when the judge said that this guy was guilty, I felt like a little kid saying, yeah.
Yeah, it does make you feel good. Because everybody wants to know what their rights are, and then and the little person in your head says, I know I have some rights here. But I just don't know how to go forth with that, and I don't know what to do about it. And if you have a legal service, then you get direction on what to do about it. So this really is, case it empowers you, you know. So.
Right. Wayne, I'm curious as to your feelings about the legal experience, because I think that you have a perspective on that as well.
It's been well documented, and if you were to ask a couple of my siblings, they'll say that I love litigation. That's not the case, but you know the deal is that you know as one goes through life, you realize you know how much guidance and support you really need until you get embroiled in a situation, and.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe in justice. I think there are a lot of cases out there that people get away with because they really don't know what the rights are. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I mean, and lawyers, mind you, can be very expensive. So you got to pick your fights and know which ones to fight for because, You know, I was convinced I had a case once, and not to get into it, but the deal is I spent a tremendous sum of money, and it could have gone either way, but the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, I had the satisfaction, even though I lost, you know, that at least I was willing to fight for what I felt was right, you know?
Exactly.
And I think that means something, you know, regardless of what goes on. You know, I didn't want to go to my grave or you know, whatever, you know, without feeling that I didn't give a good fight, you know?
Exactly.
And that's it.
What I've observed is that the law is a profession. You know, people go to law school for a reason, and the judge recognizes it. That's why a lot of times you can't go. It may seem like it's obvious points that you're trying to make there, but you can't go into a court of law and just say, "Well, Your Honor, I think this and that," because then if the person has a lawyer, they're going to trip you up. And what I've learned, just my own personal opinion, is that they kind of have their little club, you know. And once you go in that courtroom, unless you have that mouthpiece who says to the lawyer and speaks that legalese that the judge recognizes, you're speaking the same language as the judge. You know, if you're not in that club, you can kind of find yourself in a bad situation. But we got to wind down now. We got a minute and 30. I want to thank Ayanna Jones for calling us and letting us hear her voice again and a little bit what she's been up to. Glad to see that you're chilling and just kind of regrouping, because that's how you refill your artist chops when you do that, when you have time to do that, as you well know. So,
exactly.
Ayanna.
Thanks for
calling in, Ayanna. Sandy.
Thank you.